What's up, everyone? Welcome back for another installment of our Learn series around Identity. My name is Christos Matskas, and I'm a senior program manager for Identity. And together with my very good friend, JP, we're here to do the module 4 of our Learn Identity series. Hey, JP, how are you today, my friend?
Yeah, surviving. Summertime. It's hard to believe we're on number 4 or 5 already. I mean, it feels like we just started doing this yesterday.
Just so, 2 months ago.
Yeah. So today, I know it was 2 months ago. So today is number 4. So Wednesday, earlier this week on Monday, we took a look at permissions and consent. Today, we're going to dig into protecting your APIs with Microsoft Identity. So that's a big question we get a lot is, well, you guys tell us a lot about how to protect things or how to access things like Graph and Azure Resource Manager, but how do we access our own APIs? How can we use all this cool tooling for our own APIs? And that's what we're going to dig into today. And we're at number 4 of 5 of a learning path, part of Microsoft Learn. The learning path is just that. It's a set of these modules that we do one after the other, all for the purposes of trying to get you to an end state of having a brand new task or a brand new talent, a brand new skill that you can use in your day-to-day work. So today's going to be Learn Custom APIs. You got the link up there on the screen, aka.ms/learn-identity-secure-custom-APIs. That'll take you directly to the module. That module, again, is part of a 5-part series. And so if you haven't done the other three before today, you can do those at your leisure. And we're going to get into number 4 here today.
Our learning objectives for today are creating custom APIs. That's very important. And in fact, I'm really excited because usually when we talk about Identity, we tend to associate it with Microsoft Graph. It's one of the APIs that is always available to you and it's easy to set up, but it doesn't reflect real world scenarios. And today's module will actually cover these scenarios where people focus on creating APIs first before they create the consumer front-facing apps. And then we're going to create a web app to call our custom API and also a daemon app, which has very different characteristics from a normal web app. And we'll be using our own APIs with some sample data. We'll be following exactly the module steps. So everything that you see in the code and the samples and the demos today will be exactly what you will be building as well in the module as you go through with it. Now, remember, this is live and interactive. We have fantastic people moderating everything. You can ask questions, and you tell us where you are from. Please throw any questions you might have as we go through. And there will be also time in the end for some live Q&A. Again, this is part of a Learn Live series. We're on Learn TV, as well as other mediums and channels. So if you want to learn more about other things as well, we do Python, we do JavaScript, Azure, then Learn TV is the place to be. And MS Learn is where you can pick up all these different modules. So come and say hi, let us know what you're doing today, and let's dive right into it with JP taking over.
Thank you, Christos. So like we said earlier, a lot of things that we see, a lot of customers say, hey, well, you know, I've got a whole suite of my own APIs that I've built, and I need to figure out how do I secure those? How do I secure them with OAuth the same way that you're securing your own APIs? And like we've talked about too, in a lot of previous episodes, you know, historically, you would log into things with your username and password, and those things, whatever they were, would have full access to everything that you use that username and password for. And as we've used those to cover a whole lot more services, like my Google account covers a whole lot more than just my Gmail, and my Outlook account covers a whole lot more than just Outlook. We've got Xbox and Azure and Office and all these other things. We want to be selective in how we give that access out to third parties. And that sort of builds a cool app ecosystem. And it's part of the big API economy sort of buzzword that we've heard over the last few years, which is, you know, if you're building a new service today and you show up without an API, you might, you know, you're kind of behind the curve already, right? If you're building services and you want people to integrate with you, that's how things take off, is when you have a robust API that goes along with your services, because then people can come up with all sorts of new and interesting ways to use your service and your data that maybe you had never considered beforehand, right? So having a good API is sort of table stakes at this point for anything new that we're trying to build. And so, but these are still really useful internally. So even if you're just building something line of business internally, we still have APIs that we're going to build, and we still need to be able to protect them and secure them and manage which applications have access. This gets really, really important with business apps because they're accessing your business data. And if you have third-party apps that may want to access some part of that, or if you're building a mobile app or something similar and you want to give access out to the rest of your enterprise and build cool integrations or work with partners to build new integrations, you really want to have control over which parts of your applications, what kinds of data, what kinds of operations these other applications have within your systems. And so this way we can sort of secure the whole pipeline, all the way from the mobile device or the web app that you're building down through the API. We can carry that user's identity along with us to the API. And then the API knows who the user is and can access those users' resources as the user, even though they're never directly signing in to the API. They're signing into the app client. So the big thing, I guess, to think about when we look at identity is who is going to be accessing this app, right? So we think in like a traditional sort of line of business type scenario, I'm going to be accessing it because I'm an internal employee of XYZ. And because I'm an internal employee, I should have likely sort of full access to this thing, right? To this API. I should be able to do everything in the API that I could do normally. From say a web app or whatever. As you start to build software that maybe is used with different groups or with different types of audiences, you kind of get into a place where it's a little bit, you may want to be a little bit more controlled about how you're giving out that access and what kind of apps have access to that. And it may also depend some on who are the people who are going to be using it. What's their relationship between you and your company, right? Maybe they're guests. Maybe they're working with you in a capacity as a vendor where they're going to be accessing your data, your business data, but you don't want to necessarily give them another account. So you may invite mm-hmm. them into your directory to come and access stuff as a vendor, but you don't necessarily want to own their entire account, right? And so the Azure AD ecosystem helps make that a lot more interesting. There's also stuff like B2C. So we haven't talked a whole lot about Azure AD B2C, and I don't think we really intend to for the rest of the series, but Azure AD B2C is all about how do we bring in individuals? How do we bring people in to use my brand new, cool, shiny SaaS app that I've built for the internet? And of course, apps for the internet are likely going to have APIs and mobile clients and all sorts of stuff like that. How do we deal with those identities? How do we deal with completely unknown devices, mobile apps, random mobile devices with Lord knows what kind of malware or hijackings or whatever other? How do we deal with that and make sure these identities don't get compromised when they're calling our APIs? And if I've got an API out on the internet, how do I make really sure that only the right people are accessing that API? Beyond that, we've got the question of how do we want to talk to our APIs? Who are our APIs built for? Are they built for an individual to read their email, to read their calendar, you know, something like that? Or are they built for big integration scenarios? It's a big thing we see with line of business is I've got this line of business app and I need to take a huge, you know, data export every night and merge it into some reporting system or do some kind of like automated or scheduled type tasks on a regular basis, but they need to access all the data. Or maybe they need to connect as an app because that user is not, there's not going to be a user present. And we talked about that some during the last session on consent and permission. So if you're interested in consent and permissions and what a delegated permission is versus an application permission, that's a great session to go catch up on that flow. So when we're talking about users, we've got two main mechanisms for how we connect with users. A user can call an API directly, right? So I've got a single page app. Christos goes and logs into my single page app. That single page app is going to go down and call my API. We need an access token to do that. No sweat. That's probably one of the most common and most straightforward scenarios that we've got. We've got some extra ones that are a little bit more interesting. One of them is called on behalf of Flow. on behalf of Flow is where a web application, like a server-side web app, or maybe even an API, is going to then call the API, call a separate API, as the user who's calling it, right? So that's an interesting one, because you think, I've signed into, say, a single-page app. That single-page app is going to call my API for the back end of my app. But that API, that back end for my front page app, may also need to go call APIs on its own. Maybe it needs to call the graph to get my calendar data. Maybe it needs to call another internal business service. So we got to deal with all that stuff. And that's something called the on behalf of flow. And the on behalf of flow is kind of an interesting one, because it is a user-based flow that doesn't have a user present. So the user's present at the single page app, but the user's not directly interacting with the API. The app is interacting with the API, and that API is going to go call downstream to another API. And so that ends up being a little bit more of a kind of an extra hop in there, right? Anybody who did reporting services with NT and Kerberos remembers the double hop issue. And this is kind of that, right? This is two hops.
Fond memories, or not so fond memories.
That was back when reporting services came on a disk. You remember that?
Yes, yes.
It was like a separate thing, right?
Those were the days.
So we're going to build an API. We're going to build an API today, and then we're going to build two clients for that API. We're going to build a web client, and we're going to build a console client, right?
Yeah, we're skipping the native client, but the idea is the same. Like, if a native client would be a desktop app or a mobile app, but they will be more or less the same kind of approach. You have a front end that accesses an API, and then the API either acts on the behalf of the user or as the application itself.
Yeah. So let's go jump into a little bit of code. So of course, when we say that in identity world, what that really means is we're going to go to the Azure AD portal. We're going to do some work. So we've got a .NET console, .NET Core web app, .NET 5 web app, and our .NET web app. I'll go and get this pulled up here. Is this the correct one? Yeah. So this is our API. Mm-hmm. So in our .NET API, this is just .NET new web API, .NET new web API. So this is just a straight up .NET 5 web API. And this is what, if you are following the learn path, you will end up with this code. You'll end up with code that has a categories controller, a products controller, and then category and product models, because it's a product catalog is what this sample API is. So if you follow through the thing, you'll end up with the same API that we've got here. And we've put the code together just as a matter of, you don't want to watch me copying and pasting code. But the big thing that we've got here is, because this is an API, using Microsoft Identity.web, which is our primary authentication and authorization library and token acquisition library, all we really have to do is add Microsoft Identity Web API. Mm-hmm. If you use .NET templates, this is done for you, right?
Yep.
In terms of code, this is the majority of it here. So in terms of configuration, when we want to configure a JWT bearer, so we need to put a token in the bearer header, when we want to configure that, this is the extent of what we have to do in order to do that. So at this point, our web API is configured to check for the authorization header. If one doesn't exist or if the token is invalid, it's going to return a 401, and then our client has to go deal with it. It's a pretty straightforward API we've got. Now, in order to wire this up to Azure AD, we've got to do a little bit of configuration. So let's go do a little bit of configuration. So we're going to go to our Azure AD, and we're going to register an app. Everything starts with registering an app in Azure AD, as you've seen over the past 6 weeks. And I've already got a registration, but these registrations for APIs are super simple. So this one is called Learn Live API, and here it is. Now, our Learn Live API, because it is purely an API, the API itself doesn't actually need any kind of authentication configuration itself. So if we look at authentication, you'll see we haven't even added a platform, because there's no point where a user is going to directly sign into the API. All we need really is authorization. We don't actually need authentication at this point, because all we need to do is authorize users against that API.
And token validation?
And token validation, of course. But because of that, we don't need to configure platforms in Azure AD, because a user is never going to interactively sign in to the API itself. They're going to interactively sign into the clients that we build, but they're never going to interactively sign into the API directly. And because of that, we don't have to worry about adding platforms. So at a bare minimum, we register an app. We don't create any platforms. We're going to get the client ID, which we're going to need. In fact, I'm going to put this over here on the side, and we will put this VS Code over here on the side. Oops, I can find my mouse. I don't know where my mouse is, so there it is. Cool. So we need the domain, which, of course, is the name of your directory. So I'll just do on Microsoft, jpd.onmicrosoft.com. You could also use your domain name if you have a custom one, like I could use jpd.ms here. If you have a custom one that's already configured for your Azure AD, we've got our application client ID. This is just the ID of your app. We're going to need my tenant ID, which is right here. Fun fact, this doesn't have to be a GUID. It could also be the name, but we'll go by the book. Now, there's one extra thing here. You won't necessarily encounter this on your own. We need to add some scopes. So that's one of the things that that you'll walk through as we go through this. So if we are back in our applications registration, oops, which I lost because I clicked in the wrong place. If we're in our app registration, you'll notice this expose an API button here. And expose an API, this is where we define the scopes that our API needs to honor. What that really means is this is the surface where we're going to define the kinds of operations and the kinds of data, the areas within our API, and the things that people can do to those things in our API. We're going to define those here. They're just strings.
So technically, you could have an API without scopes, right? You could just do token validation for incoming tokens. But then again, that wouldn't be secure enough. And we want to have more fine-tuned control on the what people can do within the API, right? That's what scopes are used more or less.
Yep, exactly. Like in this case, we've got a few scopes. I'll open one up here. So that's actually not the one that I wanted to look at. Let's look at a different scope. Let's take a look at this scope. So these are the scopes that you'll create as you go through the learn module. So we've got one called category.read. So what and this name is completely arbitrary. It is something that means something to me and my API, but it doesn't actually mean anything to Azure AD. Azure AD doesn't care. What it's going to do is for scopes that are granted with consent, the way like we talked about earlier, or talked about early in our last session. All it's going to do is if you've consented to the scope, it's going to send it in the token. So your app or your API knows, okay, this user has consented to these things, right? So when we create a scope, we have to give it a name. And you'll notice we've got this fully qualified name here, which is API colon whack whack apps.jpd.ms, which is just an arbitrary name that I chose, and then learn live API. I called it learn live API. You can call it whatever you want. It doesn't have to be a URL that goes directly to your app. It doesn't have to be anything really meaningful. It could just be the GUID. If you do not set this, this first part here, it will be the app ID's GUID. It'll be the API app ID. It'll be the GUID of that, right?
Yep.
And anything, any scopes that you add will be tacked on to the end of that, right?
Yeah. For people that were following on the previous or last week's or Monday's session, when we talked about consent, the first part is the resource and the last part is the, you know, the permission, and all that becomes your scope.
Yep. So this is our fully qualified scope because we've named it category.read. This is the name of the fully qualified scope. So now we get to the question of, well, who's allowed to consent to this? We could have users, or we could have admins only, or we could allow admins and users. We want to allow anybody, any user of this app to come and do it. And then we just give them some display names. And the display is just what shows up in the consent dialog and what shows up when you're doing management tasks as an admin later on. Nice. So we've got, this is going to allow us to read the category information. It's enabled. We save it. And now we've got the scope defined. Now, as you go through the module, you're going to define a couple extra scopes, product.write, product.read. And what's interesting here is there may be cases where, let's take a banking app. In fact, I think we talked about this last week too. Say we've got a banking app, and from the mobile app, you're only allowed to do read-only operations. You can check your balance. You can see when your bills are going to be paid, but you can't actually change anything except for from a web app. Like we talked about your expenses, right? Maybe I can see your expenses as your manager. I can see your expenses, but I can't approve them until I'm in front of a machine where we can do extra checks or have a different UI that's in a browser or something similar, running a desktop app, you know, who knows. And so the scope is a combination of the user's permission within that system and then also the application permission. The application permission is driven by the scopes that are allowed. So we've exposed our scopes. We've defined our scopes here and exposed an API. Your application ID URI, you will be asked to set this if it has not been set, and the default is to just use API and then the GUID of your app ID GUID. I find GUIDs hard to read, and we have to look at a billion of them every day, so I thought, well, why don't we change ours? If you decide to change yours, which I did, you'll have to add one extra piece of configuration, which is the audience. The audience is who the token is intended for. So this is part of the validation. So we're also going to add this setting here, which is the resource or the audience of this token, which is going to be the API itself. And you'll notice there's no specific scope in there. It's just the resource. It's just the API's app ID URI, not the whole thing. And the reason for that, of course, is that we'll have multiple scopes within this API. The only other change we're going to make here is purely for the sake of having this run next to something else on the machine. The learn module will tell you to go put it into like the debug config. And I think that's dumb because I don't want to run this in debug. I just want to .NET run it and let it go. So we've also added this to the config of URLs localhost 5050. If you do it the other way, you'll just have to hit F5 to make it work. If you try to run it directly from command line, you'll have to either send the URLs in as a parameter to the .NET run command or make a change in config like this. So I just went ahead and made the config change. If you go and clone our repo, you'll get that config change too. Other than that, what you're looking at is what you're going to see after you've gone through the learn module in terms of configuration. Mm-hmm. So we have our Azure AD config in here. We've got our Azure AD wired up here via the startup. We've got all of our Add Microsoft Identity Web API stuff that we need in here. And in terms of scopes, the scopes are actually handled by our controllers. You'll notice things like verify user has any accepted scope. Now this is happening in a controller method. So the controller method is the thing that says, oh, I should check this. This user is trying to read categories. Do they have that scope? If they do, great. I'm going to send back this list of categories. If we don't, we're just going to fail, right?
A 403 on your response. Yeah. That'll be unauthorized. Now, the important bit here is that in startup.cs, the middleware will validate the token to make sure that it's coming from Azure Active Directory. It hasn't expired. The signatures check, but it doesn't check for your permissions or your scopes. So it's very important not only to let people through the front door, but also once they're through the front door, use the scopes to make sure that they can access the appropriate resources, as JP is showing you here.
And that's the key is with APIs, it's all about authorization because there is no user interface. The user interface is provided by whatever the upstream application is. And so because of that, authenticating you is secondary to authorizing you. And that's it sounds subtle. It's only a few letters of difference, but knowing who you are is really what your client apps are interested in. Mm-hmm. Your mobile app, your web app, your front end that your users are interacting with. Knowing who they are there is important, of course. Knowing who they are in an API isn't necessarily as important as what are they allowed to do now that they're here? And so that's why this is far, far more in the OAuth 2 authorization style than it is in the OpenID Connect authentication style. And that we're not really interested in authenticating you. We're interested in knowing that you're authorized to do the things that you'd like to do. So we've got our project all set up. We've got our models. We've got our controllers. Let's just do a .NET run and make sure that everything's still building correctly as we expect, because we're going to be using this API here in the next little bit. So let's check this out. It's building, and now it's running on HTTPS localhost 5050, so that's good, so our config settings work. So now we're all prepared and ready to go for the next bit, which is we're going to write our first client.
Yes, so but before we do that, I hope everyone has been paying attention because we do have a quiz, right? So let me share my screen, and then we'll go through the quiz very quickly, and then we'll also do a recap of what JP just talked about. Is it going to remember? Yeah, he remembers to go away. Cool. So in this exercise, you learn how to create a .NET Core or a .NET 5 or a .NET 6. It's going to be exactly the same API and secure with Microsoft Identity. It only takes one library, and as you saw, maybe four lines of code. I think the config was more than the code. And then some configuration inside Azure Active Directory. Everything starts with an Azure Active Directory app registration. And then in our controllers, as you saw, we also validate that the users have the right scopes in order for them to be able to access and do their thing. So for you to follow along, just go to https.ak.ms/learn-live-tv so you can check this thing with us. But the first question is about, can developers use Microsoft Identity to secure which types of applications? So it's web applications, desktop and mobile applications, web APIs, and all of the applications can be secure with Microsoft Identity.
Well,
we want to be inclusive, right?
I have my own suspicions. In fact, we've got a question. So while everyone's answering this question in the you can do the poll in the chat. We have a question from Pablo. Can I authorize my user on an Azure context? Presumably, I believe that, and just to make sure I understand, you're asking if you can access the user's Azure resources as them to manipulate their Azure subscription or add resources, delete resources, etc. And all that that's fine. So there is an Azure scope. It's called management.azure.com is the resource. You'll see that as an available permission when you go to add permissions to APIs, which we're going to be looking at here in a few minutes. Anyway, one of the available permissions is Azure user impersonation. And so at that point, you can essentially get access to Azure the same way through the Azure API. You can get access at the same level as the user and do operations on their behalf. So you can do it that way.
Nice.
If you want. Yeah. So if you want to authorize users using an Azure context, that gets a little bit stickier because the Azure application registrations kind of don't know anything about yours, and thus they don't have any sort of inherent permissions to go and do that. And as not the owner of the Azure, say, CLI or similar, you wouldn't have access to modify which permissions we're requesting.
Mm-hmm. So, ready to answer this question?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be D.
We are all inclusive. We want you to use Microsoft Identity to secure all these things and more. Is there anything more there? IoT, I guess. What else? What's missing? IoT.
I don't know. Web. I mean, you could maybe argue that's a desktop app, or maybe it's a mobile app. I don't know.
Is it a mobile app? It's not even a confidential client. It's a public client, so it has its own category. IoT apps. There you go. Well, let's go to the next question. What types of authentication flows can developers use when securing a web API with Microsoft Identity? Only the on-behalf flow is supported by Microsoft Identity with web APIs. Only applications that access the web API as themselves, not as a user. And both applications that access the web API without a user and the on-behalf flow are supported. Notice that today we don't have any double negatives, so we're not trying to trick you.
You know, you say that, and I haven't looked at the other knowledge checks. We're going to end up getting hit with like a double negative. Is that like a cubed negative? It's like you don't even know where to begin, how to answer it, because it's so
Yeah, square, negative. Square negative, isn't it?
Square negative.
Square negative. Okay. So what do you think is the right answer here?
Well, on behalf of flow is absolutely supported, but it's not the only thing that's supported. So it's not A. Applications can access web APIs themselves, but not a user. That we know that. And obviously we all access APIs every day as users. So I've got to go. I got to go with C here.
Ding, 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 ding. You got to keep your job today. Man, I wish I could send some sounds through my soundboard here, but it's fine. And while we're preparing for me to move on to my part, do you want to answer Pablo's question, which is a follow-up?
I do. Thank you. thank you. Thank you, Pablo, for your follow-up question. So, so when you're on mobile, mobile works exactly the same way. So from a mobile app, when I sign into a mobile app, the sign-in mechanics may be different. It may open a browser and the user signs in a browser. It may use, like in the case of Microsoft Authenticator, it uses a broker app where the Authenticator app on the user's device is the thing that actually signs them in. The net result of either of those is that your mobile app will still get an access token to call the Azure REST API. And so your code at that point just makes REST API calls, no sweat. So the only difference is that instead of me sitting in front of a web app on my phone, when I click a login button or similar in my web or in my mobile app, that mobile app's either going to pop open like a browser or an embedded system view. And that system view is going to sign the user in. It's going to ask them for consent, which we talked about in the last session. And then deliver your app a pair of ID token, a pair of ID token and an access token for the Azure REST API or your own API or whatever API you need. And then you'll get that token. If the question is, can I take an Azure, if I can take like the token out of say something like Azure CLI, because unfortunately we do have customers who do this, they'll go and grab the Azure CLI access token and use that against other services. That you can do that, but that's going to end fairly soon because we're going to start encrypting that access tokens file on desktop. So the happiest path, the best path is your mobile client is registered as an app in Azure Active Directory. It has permissions to the APIs that you need to call, be them your own APIs or Azure. And you get a token through the normal OAuth 2 flow that your user goes through on your mobile device.
And that's the beauty, right? We have consistency. No matter what you use, one way or another, you'll end up with an access token that allows you to do the things that you need to do as long as you have the right permissions.
Yep.
Cool. So we saw the API that JP so meticulously put together, which was great. And now we're going to use a web app to call into that API. Now, the Microsoft Identity Platform has done a fantastic job in improving the .NET experience. So in this unit, we will show you how to use server-side code, not client-side, no Blazor, no SPAs, to call into that API. But you can call that API from anything. In fact, later on, JP will do a demo from a console app, which has different characteristics, as I said. I think that this is taking us from the same demo as the same screenshots we'll be seeing later on, but you need to create an app registration again for your web app. This app registration needs to use a client secret in order to go and acquire a token on your behalf. So you sign in and then the code will go and acquire a token. We'll show you how to do that. And it all starts, it's finally in the templates. So early on in the process, Microsoft.identity.web was not in the template, so it was a bit tricky to use it. But now when you do .NET new, it will prompt you or it will ask you if you want to add authentication. And if you do single org, then it will add the two packages that you see below. So you don't have to explicitly add those packages. Now, if you're doing it today, I don't know which version of Microsoft Identity.web downloads. So there have been changes in the API. I think right now it's at 1.14. So quite a few changes from the demo code that you see. I think on the demo, we use 1.1. But we'll discuss about those changes as we go through. And as with the app that JP showed you for the API, you need to provide a tenant ID and the client ID and a client secret. and a domain, so we can wire up everything in the application. And then this is the code that we use to do it. In fact, I'm going to jump into the demo and show you exactly what we're doing because it's easier to show in code. So in this demo, we're going to create a web app. I already have the web app created, so I'll save you the pain seeing me copy-pasting stuff. We'll create a single-tenant app application in Azure AD. I've already done that. Create a client secret. I've already done that. I don't want to dox myself, although I will delete it anyway. And then the web application will be accessing the API. So let's switch to my demos. So we have, this is our API. This API is already running. Let's go very quickly again, confirm what we have here. Now this one is running against my tenant. JP's API was running against his tenant. We could have used the same, but sometimes it's just easy to use your own code. So my settings are slightly different because I don't have a custom name. JP always likes to use his custom names in the APIs. I don't. I like my goods. So this is my the standard instance. This is my domain, my Microsoft Developer 365 account that we use for most of our demos because it lets us go around any permissions and admin consents that we have to use. That's my tenant ID and the client ID. We'll confirm them in a second on the browser. Then in the NuGet packages, we have two packages here for, that's my API, so just that. We have the Microsoft Addendum.web. And in the startup, I have wired up my middle where it's exactly the same as JP's. And down here we have authentication authorization. In our controllers, we again have the authorize. So we expect a token. If there's no token here, we'll get a 401. And then if we don't have the scopes, we'll get a 403 once we hit the action. Now this is sweet, but this does not exist anymore in later versions. So from 1.6 onwards, Microsoft Addendum.web has removed this one and actually uses attributes on your controller actions. So if you go through the module and suddenly you can't make it work because this is not found, then you either have to go back into using an older version, 1.1 or anything below 1.6, or use the new API surface. So this is our API currently working. It's running at port 5050, which we had to configure so we can let things run side by side. Let's go and see our web app. So first and foremost, we'll jump into our Azure Active Directory. This is my client app. We had to define authentication here because we do have users interacting with the application. They need to sign in. So this is the redirect URI where the information, the user information, the ID tokens will be returned. I had to create a certificate. Remember, you can only grab it once. Once you move away, you have to delete it and create it again if you miss it. And then that's it. I haven't configured any API permissions because we're using dynamic consent and Microsoft Addendum.web allows you to request them at runtime. We talked about that on Monday, so I hope you were paying attention. So let's jump into the code. So what do we have in the code? This is the wrong one. There you go. Let's jump here. We have our app settings. That's my secret. It's fine. I'm going to delete it anyway. So again, very similar format, but here we also need to say where the callback URL will be. This needs to match our app registration, otherwise it will fail miserably. Then we have a few constants. This is where we define the scopes. Now, remember how JP was talking about product.read and category.read, and he was using his fancy naming? I'm not. I'm just using plain GUIDs here. And these are needed because when I say, go and get me a token, we need to say which scopes are we requesting a token for. They're all for the same resource, so we can ask for all of them in one go. In fact, you notice there's a nice helper property here called scopes that includes all of them. So when we say, go and get me my scopes, we'll pass all of them into our request. So in our startup.cs, we have a similar kind of wiring app. We have add my Microsoft Identity web app because it is a web app, not an API. But we also say, you know what? I also need to enable my Microsoft Addendum.web to acquire tokens for my API, my downstream API. And we're passing the scopes. Remember, we're talking about the scopes that we're having a helper property. And we're also using an in-memory cache. That means that while the application is running, I don't have to go back and request for a new token every time I need to access my API. Once I sat down and restart my application, it will have to go through the process of reacquiring a token for me because it's not in the cache anymore. In production, that would be either a session cache or a distributed cache, which wires up directly into Microsoft at end.web. So they've made it super easy to use any backend that implements iDistributed cache. You'll also notice that we have a policy here that says you cannot access anything in the application unless you are an authorized user. So all the controllers have this policy applied to it. And finally, we have the user authentication and user authorization down here. So two lines of code here and maybe seven lines of code to wire up the authentication in the middleware. In our controllers now, we have a product controller and a categories controller that provide a UI. Again, notice the same pattern. We have an authorize. So we only allow people that have signed in to come into the application, although the policy will still apply anyway. And in our, now check this out. Inside our application, we say, if you're signing in, you need to have the right scope. So here, we're expecting a scope to be passed in. And then we're also acquiring an access token for our scopes downstream. And then once we get our access token through the MSAL, so you notice that there's a token acquisition. This is a helper class that gets injected through the middleware. So any controllers that need to acquire, or any code, in fact, that needs to acquire a token can get this dependency injected. And that allows us to go and acquire tokens. So we don't have to bootstrap that all the time. It's already available for us. And then we pass the access token as a bearer authorization header with the access token. And then we call our API. So if we go to our application, which is currently running here, you'll also, if I go to localhost 5001, says, where are you going? You need to sign in first. Okay, so we'll sign in. I have already consented to the scopes once, so it doesn't ask me to consent to the scopes. And now, you know, well, we don't have navigation, but if you go to products, then it returns everything back. What happens here is
that those products are coming from the API, right?
Indeed. So what happens, in fact, we can put a breakpoint here so we can see it in action. If I put a breakpoint in here, as I was testing before, and we refresh the page. Did I put it in the wrong controller? Which one is that? Index. So I was in the categories, that's why. I was like, what? My breakpoint doesn't work. Okay, so let's refresh the page. Aha, breakpoint is hit. So see here, we'll try to get the token. Now that token is already in the cache, so it's not gonna go to Azure Active Directory for us. And then take that. We have the token here. And if I were to go and crack that open and see what's in there, you notice that we have my API resource. That's the audience that we're sending the token. You'll also notice that we have the scopes in place, which are case sensitive, by the way. That was fun. And dude, honestly. Anyway, so let's let that run. This is the beauty, right? And then just let it play and we get our data back. That's it. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. So very, nice. Very few lines of code to wire all that up. This morning we recorded a session about migrating from legacy auth to modern auth. And I have to say that I'm very lucky to jump in identity when all these things came to play, because it's so much easier to wire all these things up. And even if you're not doing ASP.NET, which is so easy, even in other .NET or any other language, we still have very few lines of code that you as a developer have to implement to make it all happen. So, wow, that's still going on. Okay, so let's jump back into our slides.
So we got a couple questions while that. So we've got one more from Pablo. He says, I'm assuming
on, Pablo.
Pablo says, what is the better option to hold app settings info to GitHub, variable environment variables, et cetera? I mean, Secrets in GitHub are a big one. So in your GitHub, if you're using things like GitHub Pipelines, GitHub Pipeline has a place to store secrets.
Yep.
You really wouldn't want your code to have any secrets, perhaps secret references. Christos has a great session on using Key Vault for ASP.NET configuration so that it bootstraps at runtime. We've done a couple sessions on using on what we call secretless apps in GitHub, which is rather than using secrets, we assign identities to VMs and then let those VMs or app services or whatever make their own calls using things called managed identities, where we don't have to manage the credentials. But generally speaking, you don't want any credentials in GitHub, certainly not checked into the code. If you need those secrets, however, for things like CI/CD pipelines or GitHub actions, deployment actions, those sorts of things, there is a special place in GitHub in your project called secrets. And that's a great place to store your secrets, because once they're stored, they can't be retrieved again. And they are treated as secrets.
We also have Bicep, Terraform, Pulumi, and ARM all working with Key Vault as well. So you don't have to use GitHub. You don't have to be tethered into GitHub if you want to try different CI/CDs or run cell or commands anywhere. Then you can use that approach. Yep.
And then Giovanni's question, there are rate limits your app can consume. What if there are millions of users using your app? Are they all going to hit the same limit? So rate limiting, there are probably four or five different places you could be rate limited here. So this is our API, one that we wrote, right? It's just our sample API that we wrote. And then we're going to host an app service or, you know, a VM or EC2 or Lambda or Functions or wherever you want to put it. And if you just stuck it out there on the internet, potentially, if you've got millions of users, you just need a lot of compute to do it. If you wanted to implement rate limiting, there are, of course, lots of different ways to do that directly in code. But you could also use something like Azure API Management, a Kong API gateway, some kind of a gateway, an API gateway that will handle things like rate limiting for you. And things like API Management are cool because they understand Azure AD, they understand Azure AD tokens, and can do some of the pre-flight authentication for you, including rate limiting based on user keys, which is really cool. So you could say, I only want users to have 100, max of 100 requests per second. And so if you get, we get more than that, then, shut it down, send them back a 429, make them retry. When it comes to our APIs, Azure, Graph, Azure AD, all the different APIs that run Microsoft services, each one of those have various API rate limits themselves. Most of them are dependent upon which resources you're accessing within those APIs. Azure has its own rate limiting, but Microsoft Graph, which is where most of the like user stuff in Azure AD and Office and Teams and all that kind of stuff, the Graph rate limiting is a lot of it. It's all documented, so it's all out there. They're actually pretty good docs on the rate limiting. A lot of it is driven by which resources you're accessing. So you may have a rate limit of 100 requests per second against Exchange, and you might have 1,000 requests per minute against SharePoint files that you're accessing. So it's all through the same API, but it's rate limited that way. So the way that we do rate limiting is it's all driven by the app's ID. Mm-hmm. And so our rate limits are driven by the specific application that's calling those APIs, like calling Graph, for example, and how many times they can request tokens, which is the last sort of set of rate limiting. Multi-tenant applications, which are apps that anybody can use in any Azure AD, those have a higher limit, of course, because they're multi-tenant and they could potentially be being used by a lot more users than just a single tenant. Generally speaking, you will not be rate limited unless you're under like an absolute like abuse type of a type of a thing. So if you've got something that is absolutely thrashing Azure AD, asking for tokens at a really, really, really high rate limit, there's a potential that you would get 429 and that you'd be asked to chill. But generally speaking, and I have to say, I've done identity work here for a decade now, and I've never hit a rate limit on Azure AD. Like, I've never gotten to that point. So typically if that happens, it would be the kind of app that was possibly millions of users, with no caching, with no, like, it would be a misconfiguration.
Yeah, misconfiguration. That's right.
The, the user experience of requesting that many tokens would mean I wasn't caching them, which would mean I'm getting redirected to Azure AD to go sign in and do all that sort of stuff. And so there would be some, it'd be a pretty significant misconfiguration to get rate limited by Azure AD, generally speaking. Like, now, if you've got millions of simultaneous users on your app, then feel free to give us a call and we'll be happy to help out.
Because just to throw a number out there, Azure AD can handle 30 billion plus authentications a day. So authenticating users, there's no platform issue. But if you have that many users, which would be an awesome problem to have, then you can speak to our teams. And in many cases, there are soft limits that can lift for you to allow you to be successful. But again, as JP says, it's very hard to get that point. And if you do get that point, there are ways to make the experience better.
No, we're not saying that's a challenge either.
Please don't break Azure AD.
I don't want someone to call and say, oh, you said we wouldn't get rate limited. And it's like, oh, look at what I did to get rate limited. Like, I'm not saying you should try, just that generally speaking, authentication requests, we've got a ton of scale to handle a high volume of authentication requests and token issuances. So but that said, we do have some work that's going on right now to reduce the number of times that you have to request tokens. It's called continuous access evaluation. We're pushing it through working with the standards groups to turn it into a standard. And it means that you as the app developer may request a token, and you may have that token for hours or days before it expires. And we will send you a webhook notification when it is invalid, when it has been invalidated. So you don't have to continually ask for them over and over again. You get one and you use it until we tell you otherwise, which is a pretty big improvement to the way it is today. Also because you get immediate invalidation. So if that user leaves your org or has their password compromised or something, your apps will get a notification to say, hey, this is no longer a valid user. So don't let their mobile phone connect to Outlook or, you know, whatever. So
indeed,
knowledge
indeed.
Check time.
Let's do some knowledge check time. Right. So our first question of the day, at least for my segment, is using its credentials. Which of the following best explains the on behalf of flow? I mean, we haven't really covered it on this one, but we talked about it. So we haven't coded around it. Using its credentials and the currently signed in user's access token, an API obtains a new access token to call a downstream API, secure API. Or using the credentials of the currently signed in user and the app's credentials, an app obtains a new access token to call a secured API. Just to sound very similar. And an app uses the currently signed in user's access token to call a secured API. So we know for sure that when you acquire an access token, it's for one resource, right? So having that same token being passed around, access token, doesn't work. So therefore, C is out. So it's either A or B.
Well, I think the subtlety there is using the credentials and the currently signed in user's access tokens, or using the credentials of the currently signed in user. That's the distinction there. And, we didn't talk about the flow. And the reason we didn't talk about the specifics of the flow is because as a developer, you don't actually have to care the specifics of that flow, because Identity.web and MSAL handle it for you. So how you craft an OBO request on behalf of request to Azure AD, or how you request an access token with, say, authorization code, the libraries handle the bulk of that for you. And so that's why we actually didn't cover the specific mechanics about how this works. So,
yes.
Let's see what the audience says. So right now the primary votes are around A, which is great. And that's because I too believe that A is the correct answer. A for Apple.
And that's because we never ever, as developers or as apps running against Azure Active Directory, we never see the user's credentials. Like they don't make it to the app anyway. So B would be impossible to do unless you were hacking the system. So if you're using Microsoft Identity, then the user gets redirected somewhere else to enter their credentials, and all you get back is an ID token. Therefore, it's not possible to ever use their credentials to go and acquire a token for them. Next.
Now, C, before you go on to the next one, I just want to mention C is an interesting one because C is sort of an anti-pattern that we see frequently, where people will take a single access token that they get for a single resource and they will reuse it across many different resources, many different APIs, and they'll configure all their APIs to validate a single access token. And I think historically there were some legacy APIs that used to do that, and some of it was to reduce the number of token requests and that sort of thing. But we don't want you to do that. You lose all the granularity and control. You lose the ability to have discrete scopes for different kinds of APIs. And so we really want you to focus on, I have an API that's one registration, and it is the definition of what that API does. Mm-hmm. I might have 10 clients for that API. And if I've got 10 clients, I might have 10 registrations, one for each one of those clients. But ultimately, that API definition and the API scope definition is what drives the permissions for that. And if I have a second API, then my second API should have a separate registration so that you can control them independently and be really precise in what you're requesting from your users in terms of permissions and also in how you're securing your APIs. So, yeah,
granularity. That's the word, granularity.
Yeah.
Which is the correct, go on, last one. Which is the correct way to reference custom scopes, such as product or read, when including them in an access token request? Is it API colon /// whatever ID you decide to use, whether you go fancy as JP or whether you go primitive like me with GUIDs?
Product.read.
Well, I don't have my custom domain, so I can't do that. Then is it just product.read or is it API colon /// product.read? What do you think it is? I think I've already given the answer away, but it's fine.
Well, I mean, it's funny about this is that we and Identity don't actually do this the same way every time. So while API colon /// the client ID of the web app or the app ID, it's really the app ID URI. That's what it's called, mm-hmm. the application ID URI. While that is the fully qualified scope, with one specific resource, we offer you the shortcut that you see with B, which is just the name of the permission. So with graph and only graph,
yes,
you can do things like user.read or mail.write or whatever. And you don't have to include HTTPS colon whack whack graph.microsoft.com in front of it. But that's the only one. So it's a shortcut just for graph. So get into the habit of having the full ID would be my, which is A, which is my answer. So
yes, ding, ding, ding. We get to keep our jobs. Awesome.
You know what's really suspicious, though?
Go on.
We've had four knowledge check questions, and we've yet to have a double negative. I worry they're going to be
I'm telling you, there's no double negatives today. Just making it confusing because people now expect double negatives. Negative squared. Yes.
Okay.
Back to you.
Last one. We've looked at a web API, and we've got a web app, a server-side web app calling our API using on behalf of Flow, where we've got this user's access token, and we're going to take the access token that we receive as the API, we're going to use that to turn around and call another API, get a brand new access token for that other API. What we also have are these things called daemon apps. We've never actually coalesced on an actual pronunciation. In fact, we've asked and polled, and the polls were always like 50%. So I'm still not entirely sure if it's called a daemon app or a daemon app or something completely different. But at the end of the day, Windows services, cron jobs, scheduled tasks, whatever you want to call them, I think inevitably we all have a need at some point or another where we've got to have some kind of ongoing task privileged backend access or something. Yeah, that needs to go and something that needs to go process data without a user present.
Yep.
And so for that, that's where we use what's called the client credentials grant and OAuth 2. and more specifically for the purposes of today, how we define those permissions of what those applications can do is a little bit different than how we define scopes for apps where users are sitting in front. And while we're getting there, we have one more question from Giovanni. Mm-hmm. If I have 5,000 tenants and just one OAuth AD, how would I make parameterized roles to give role-based access, but only to particular tenants? Since a role is a fixed string, I would need 5,000 roles. So I don't know if I would use, well,
that would be a multi-tenant app, right? Wouldn't.
So if you've got a multi-tenanted app, multi-tenant in the Azure AD feature sense, and it sounds like you've got a multi-tenant app if you've got 5,000 tenants in your app. The way that would work is that the users are assigned to roles, and the roles would be constant across all of the directories. So mm-hmm. a reader role or a read role or whatever. That would be constant across all the directories. The difference would be that your application would identify a specific tenant based on the tenancy of the user. So which directory, which tenant the user used to sign in would drive the tenancy and be mapped to some kind of organization ID or some kind of tenant ID or something in your app. So one of the claims you'll get is a tenant ID. Mm-hmm. You'll also get an issuer, and the issuer will have a specific value for a specific tenant or for a specific Azure AD directory. The issuer and the TID, the tenant ID claim, those two will tell you, will give you uniqueness in terms of the organization a user is affiliated with. And then the roles that they come in with, the roles would be constant across all of them. So you'd use the tenant ID or the issuer ID to determine which organization they're a member of within your applications, like whatever your application's concept of tenancy is. Yep. The tenant ID is one option to use to say, okay, I know the authorizing organization. And then the roles that they're a member of, they'd be placed into by an admin in their own thing. Yep. The second part of your question says I have 5,000 tenants and just one OAuth AD.
I think it's an access token.
Well, that leads me to, does that mean you have one Azure AD that's driving all of your 5,000 customers or 5,000 customer organizations?
Yeah, that's a bit of an overloaded, like it's not very clearly defined, I would say. Also, roles are not the same as scopes. So you might be confusing there. So roles will be defined as either user roles or application roles, and they are constant, as JP said. Scopes are specific to your API. And then are you planning on rolling out that API into 5,000 tenants? So it's a little bit, you know, it's not very clear, I think, for us to be able to answer this one. But we do have a Discord channel if you want to join us there. And then we can help you out because, again, we won't have enough time here to cover this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there are lots of different ways to skin the cat, but there's some specifics around how your app is configured and am I deploying this 5,000 times? Is it one API? Mm-hmm. Is it
the front end app?
Yeah. Are you giving users brand new usernames and passwords that are within a single AD? Are they guests? Are they in their own ADs? Like there are lots of different things we need to nail down. So,
mm-hmm. Exactly.
And when it comes to scopes versus roles versus app roles, we're just going to add to that confusion right now. Because for whatever reason, it's Microsoft. We name the same things. We name similar things the same thing, even though they're not the same. So back to our demon daemon. We still don't know if it's demon or daemon, but apps that don't have a user present. We talked about those a lot with consent and permissions last week, because consent and permissions for apps is a little bit different than a consent and a permission for an app that's accessing things as a user.
Yep.
A mobile app being able to read my calendar is a lot different than some console app reading my entire organization's calendars. Right. Like that's a pretty big like security delta there. And so we need to be able to sort of manage those and deal with them appropriately. in my experience of doing this with and working with customers, so many of these daemon scenarios come down to integrations. They all come down to, we've got a partner that needs to get a big export of data, or we need to move data from system A to system B. We want to take a dump of our CRM system and push that into some internal reporting system that merges it with ERP data or something. Like, there's always some kind of an integration style scenario for migrating between systems or for different things. And so that's where we see these the most frequently. But of course, there are lots of different scenarios you could find yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go look at some code. Let me get my screen up here. We're going to look at a couple of things. If I can remember how to share my screen.
It's a little bit late for JP over there, so we can forgive you for the very top. There's like an arrow. Is he gone? No, his internet is suffering. Too many pixels. I think he hit his quota. All right, while JP is trying to recover from... Oh, you're back. You're back. Are you back?
Oh, I'm back. Okay. I hope
yes,
so.
You're back.
Okay, good. Sorry. Somebody must have started streaming a YouTube video downstairs or something, and our limited bandwidth suffered. Okay. And I can hear my two-year-old. He's not far, so Lord only knows what the next few minutes is going to bring. Hey, kiddo, can you get out of here for a minute?
Oh, we have this.
Yeah, I got to work. See you, kiddo. Sorry. Somebody's escaped from the bath and decided to come upstairs. Anyway.
Nice.
Okay. So first, we've got our API from earlier. So we're going to do I'm just going to do a .NET run on this just so it's up and running, right? And next, let's get our Azure AD stuff back up. And I'm going to get
yourself, or do you have two different consoles side by side? Because it looks like it's the same UI.
They are just two different consoles side by side.
Now I know. Okay.
No, sorry. It's the Windows splitting in Windows Terminal.
What? There's Windows splitting in the Windows Terminal?
Yeah, you can even split horizontally, vertically, whatever you want to do. Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah. So we've got our web API. It's up and running. It's on localhost 5050. Now let's go look at some code here for our console app. So our console app's pretty straightforward. All it's going to do is call our products API and try to spit some stuff out. However, it is going to do it as itself. So a user isn't going to sign in. We're not going to see a pop-up. We're not going to see a window pop-up that says, hey, pick your username or type in your username. We're not going to see any of that.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, in terms of the OAuth flows, this is one of the more straightforward ones because it literally is a client ID and some kind of a client credential, be it a secret or a certificate. So the way that we do these is actually quite straightforward. The code in here is pretty straightforward. We're going to create a confidential client app, which is an MSAL object. So we're not going to be using identity.web here because we have no web. We only have a console app. So we're not going to be using identity.web. We're just going to use MSAL, which is an iConfidential client application. We're going to get some settings out of JSON. Or we're going to get some settings out of our JSON file, which we're going to go set. In particular, the API scope that we need, and we're going to talk about what this is because it's going to be very specific. So we're going to try to get a token for our application, and then we're going to make a call to our API, to the categories endpoint of our API, to go try to read some categories. That's going to
very
be
nice.
Now, if we go back and look at our API code, we will make one change in our API code. We will make one change in the API code from what you'll have from the first exercise, right? So in our first exercise, in our Learn Live API, which apologies, I decided to move, in here, in our category, in our category controller, in our get categories method, we have a conditional here. So first we're going to check, is the user in a role called accesses application?
Uh-huh.
Now, we haven't talked about that yet. We need to go and define that. And what we're essentially saying is there a role for the user called accesses application? And it's a role. It's not a scope. And that's a pretty – they're similar, but they're different in this case. So we're not going to be dealing with scopes here. We're going to be dealing with roles. even though we're going to present them in the Azure AD UI as scopes, they're not actually scopes. They are implemented as application roles. What that also means for your app is that your app, especially if your app is ASP.NET, it's going to read those as roles because they're going to come over in the roles token. And because they're coming over as roles, you as the developer are going to have to treat them slightly differently than you would than you would the scopes. So it is a little bit a little weird. I would say, if I had to guess as to why, I think it's probably a bit of a legacy hangover of the fact that Azure AD has been around for over a decade now, and things that were implemented as roles before have now sort of taken on a little bit of a different name. But that's okay. So we've got this check for accesses application. And we've also, if that one, if the user's not in this role, e.g. the user is not the application, we're going to do the verify user has any accepted scope, which Chris just talked about earlier, as being a little bit of an older API that's in identity.web. So in order for us to define this role, we've got to go to Azure AD first. So let's get back over to the Azure AD portal.
And so let's go to our API. Just to clarify, if you have a console app or a non a daemon app or a headless app, then you cannot use scopes. You cannot request an access token for a scope. You have to use app roles.
Correct. For application permissions. And that's that's a key bit. We're going to look at that here. So because the roles and scopes are defined on the API itself and then requested by other applications, we need to get back into our API. Now, for expose an API, this is where we set our scopes when we did expose an API. However, for these, we're going to define an app role. Okay. And the app role here, I've already created one, but this is all the, this is what you'll type in. We're going to call it accesses application. That's what you're going to see in the UI and see in the management experiences. And you can do users, you can do apps, or you can do both. So if you're doing RBAC with users, you could always define user roles here. But if you are, if you need to do application permissions, this is where we're also going to define those. So we're going to do just applications for this one because we don't want users to be in this role. It's just going to be, it's just going to be applications. The value is the thing that actually comes over in the token. So the value is the thing that we have to look for. It's called accesses application. So we need to make sure that it matches. We're going to enable that app role. Great, right? Now, when it comes to putting users or principals or applications into these roles, things are also a little bit different, but closer to what you might expect. So we've updated our API. Our API is ready to go. Our API knows about this app role. Now we need to get an app into it. So let's go look at LearnLive API console. Now, I registered this app earlier today. It's console client. So it's got some bits that we're going to have to come back and get here in a minute. But largely, it is pretty much the same thing as last time. We don't have any authentication schemes because we don't have user interactive auth. So we don't have to worry about that. We have a secret, which we had to do. But we also need to define some app. We need to set the API permission. And so this is saying, hey, what does this app need access to? Now, Christos didn't have to do this in his web app because his web app has a user present. And because it's asking for user permissions, the user and the user sitting there, the user can do consent when they need them. That's something we talked a lot about in the last session. So if you're interested in that, be sure to go back and watch that one. But instead of us defining which permissions we need up front, we let our developers choose that. And as the developers, we choose when we want to ask for those permissions in a web client or in a single page app or a mobile app, because we have a user present there to make that consent decision. We can ask for that up front, or sorry, we can ask for that when we need it, instead of having to bombard a user with 9,000 permissions whenever they go to sign into the app, right? Now, with a console app or a scheduled task, cron job, Windows service, whatever, we don't have that luxury. We don't have the ability to say...
consent.
We don't have the ability to do consent. And so because of that, every application permission is admin consent only, because an administrator must say, I want this application to be able to do this. So I've got this one here. I'm going to delete it and we'll just go back and do it again. So let me remove this permission. We'll get rid of it. Let's remove it and let's go look and see what we have to do. So the only thing our console app can do right now is user.read, sign in and read a user profile, which it doesn't even need this because it's not going to ever sign in a user, but it comes by default and I'm going to leave it for now. So when we add permissions, we're going to do this. We do this for both scopes and for app roles. And you can use Graph. And somebody was asking earlier about Azure. Like, there's the Azure Service Management here, even though Azure mm-hmm. Service Management has a very loaded term because that's what it used to be called before the ARM API. But Service Management is how you get to Azure stuff, whatever. We're actually going to go to this tab up here called My APIs. And these are APIs that I have defined or my company has defined that I use. So you'll see a bunch of junk in here.
Don't call, don't call your apps junk. They're, you know, valuable.
Never use my apps. So we're gonna get to our Learn Live API. So we got Learn Live API, and we have delegated permissions. Now these are the scopes that we defined. So these are things: category read, category write, product read, product write. But we also have application permissions, and under our application permissions, you'll see this is the one that we have. This is our description. This is how we defined it. Accesses application. We check this box. We add this permission, and now we've added the permission, but we have not yet consented to it. And that's key here is if we go try to run this app right now, it's going to say, oh, sorry, you haven't consented to this yet. It's mm-hmm. going to say this app doesn't have permission and will not be granted a token, including this permission. And that's one last point to hammer home before we move away from the portal. And an application in Azure AD, an app registration, has a corresponding service principle. Think of the service principle as being the sort of the instance of the app. So if the application registration is sort of like a template, the service principle is the actual securable object. Excuse me. The service principle in this case, a service principle or an application can always get a token as itself. Always. So I could always go to Azure AD as an application and say, please give me a token. And it will always give me a token. However, it will not return roles if I am not a member of any of those roles. And that's a key point is if your API isn't checking for expected application roles, if all it's doing is any authorized user or any authenticated user, I'll be able to call that API with, you know, with a client. It's not like anybody could call it, but a client can get a token with the correct audience. So it can get a token with the right audience. That's a valid signed Azure AD token. It doesn't have any roles in it, but they can still get a token mm-hmm. with a service principle and call your API. So it's very, very, very important that when you're using these apps, that you handle the permissions via application permissions so that you don't get stuck in that zone, I guess. So I have to consent to this again, or I have to do admin consent. And so there's a button here, grant admin consent. There's also a web flow for this, which we talked about in last week's session on consent, where if you're an ISV or you're building software, you can send a user to a specially crafted URL and it will ask them for admin consent and the administrator can do it. And in fact, you'll notice over here, it says admin consent required and that the status is green, which means it's been checked. It's great. So that means Learn Live API console client, bear in mind, we're in the console client, we're not in the API itself, has access as application on Learn Live API. Mm-hmm. So let's go get our, let's go get the fun bits out of here that we need in order to make our configuration work. So let's go over to our app settings. And we're going to get our copy and paste machine geared up here. So we need an app ID. Got that here. In fact, you know what? I'm just going to switch branches because I've already got a branch that's configured. And that way
coming prepared.
Well, that way I don't have to worry about... Ooh. Oh, no, wait a minute. I didn't do the right one. Never mind. I'm a fool. I did it on the wrong one. So we're going to have to do it anyway. That's okay. Whatever. It's just 5 settings. We'll be all right. Let's get this up over here. So we're going to get our client ID. We've got our client ID. This is our applications ID, of course. Mm-hmm. So we have our client ID. We have our tenant. We'll get our tenant in here.
That's the instance of our Azure AD, more or less. Tenant ID, right. Instance of Azure AD.
Yep, we need a secret. So I'm going to go get a secret. I'm going to create a new one that's going to expire tomorrow so that I don't, because inevitably I'll walk away and forget.
We need an automated task in Graph to do that for us.
You know, we started writing one of these, but delete me, yeah. No really. So we're going to call this delete me, no really. We're going to add the secret. We're going to get the secret and paste it in. So let's get our secret. We'll get this. We're going to paste this in. Or you could also use .NET user secrets. I've been using .NET user secrets quite a bit here locally. are or quite keyboards. A bit
here. Or technically, when you're running production, you'll be using a certificate.
We have our API base address, which is just where we're going to call our API. So it's going to be running localhost 5050, no sweat there. The big thing is going to be this API scope. Now, again, this is going to be the resource ID for which you need a token. So mm-hmm. in our case, our LearnLive API. Now, this could be the client ID, or in my case, because I named mine differently, it's apps.jpd.ms/LearnLiveAPI. And because of this, we need this dot default scope. And dot default, we've got a blog post out on dev.2 about it, dev.2/425show. We've got a blog post out there specifically about dot default because it does cause a lot of confusion. The net result here is, by requesting the dot default scope, we're saying to Azure AD, give me a token that has all of the permissions that I have admin consented to for this specific resource. Mm-hmm. So give me a token that gives me all of the scopes or permissions for this specific resource that I'm trying to access. Because of course it'd be different for my API versus say Confa, we were also calling Graph. So we have to have this set here, and then we always use dot default. We do not request specific. We do not request specific ones here because in order for this to work, we have to have consented to them up front anyway. And so we use dot default as a way to shortcut and say, I don't need to ask you for each scope. Just give me everything you got. Okay, so let's get the API running. API is running. So let's get to our console client, and I'm just going to go do a .NET run, and let's see what happens. I wonder if I saved my app settings.
Wow. I'm also
curious on slow internet how long it's going to take to get a token and then call my API. But that's okay. That's it's doing something.
It's so spinning it all they go. Token acquired.
There we go. Token acquired. Excellent. Web API yes. result. There we go. So we called our web API and we've exited. So that's awesome. So this way we have called from one piece of code, we've called into our API, and we have a lot of control over what that API is allowed to do. If we tried to call a different endpoint, tried to call a different method within this, because we're not checking for that role, we wouldn't be able to do it. So Christos, should we get back to our, let's get back to our next, I think we are up to our next knowledge check, are we not?
Well, we're running slow on time, so we might as well just do the summary here, right?
Okay.
Yeah, we have, and if there are any questions, we can take them now. But it's been great actually working with custom APIs and seeing how they are secured. It was also great to see how different applications need to acquire tokens and the fact that there are different flows that people need to be aware of. Also, the important distinction between scopes and application permissions or roles that need to be used based on the model of the solution that you're building around it. But the point here is that we want you to write secure apps and secure APIs, and that security needs to be applied in layers. It's not just the front door. You don't just check the user once before they come in. You also need to continuously evaluate their access throughout the application. And it's very rare that you'll have one type of user in your solution. You'll usually have normal users and admins and maybe some in-between roles. So being able to hone into these and create secure apps is very important. So if you are building APIs, no matter where you run them, whether it's Azure Function APIs or full-blown, you know, .NET APIs or Python or whatever, we have the right libraries and the right tools for you to write them securely. We covered section four of our LearnLive module here for identity. As you can see, the very top, the ak.ms implement dash identity is the full course. You can go there and follow along. There are videos of us doing them for the previous modules. So if you missed the opportunity to watch us live, you can go on YouTube and watch them there. There will also be a full playlist at the end. And next week, next Monday, we're doing the last bit, which is all about user groups and roles. And will probably be a bit of an overlap with the stuff that we discussed in the last couple of days. But it's been great having you here. And JP, I'll let you take this one. Learn live on Learn TV, isn't it?
Sorry, all my kids decided now's a great time to come and visit. So at least they're in pajamas. I guess that's a good start for me. But so this is our fourth of five of the overall learn module series mm-hmm. that we're doing today. It's called a learning path. this is also part of a broader, I think it's an associate called Implement Microsoft Identity. It's a sort of a broader MS Learn like badge that you can get for going through various challenges and going through various various ones of these. So we are super excited that we've been able to go through this with you. But like we said earlier, there are a ton of different things out there on MS Learn. The one that Christo saw was about Rust, which is awesome. So if you want to go look at, if you want to go through a learning Rust course, there's one out there on MS Learn. There's stuff out there for Azure, for Office, for security, for Dynamics. I mean, everything that Microsoft does, you can probably find a Learn module out there for it. So please go out there and check it out and learn something new.
Yes, we have one last question if you want to take this one. The question is it okay to open a window in a mobile app to authenticate my user, even if my environment is a bank environment with users logged in with their document number and their password? Single sign-on, I guess, works very well here if it's a line of business app, right?
If it's line of business, and you say the user logged in with a document number, that sounds like it's a very like resource specific password. Like I have a specific doc number with a password that lets me get into it. I think we'd probably need some more details to offer real guidance here. I mean,
yeah,
if that identity is not, if it's not really an identity, but it's more like a password to access a very specific document, that, and there's not like a broader concept of an identity wrapped around that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't exist in any sort of upstream system like an Azure AD. That would be, I feel like that would probably not fit very well with what we've been talking about here. Sure. It's certainly possible maybe instead of using a document number, why use a document number and a password to sort of establish who I am. And then we, you know, onboard and turn that into a user account with a separate username and password or an email address or social account or whatever. At which point I use that to sign in subsequently. Like we were doing some mortgage stuff and we did something like that where it was like, hey, you've got this, you know, deed number or something, use that with a password. But then we upgraded to like a full blown account that was stored in AD or Azure AD B2C or whatever. And we use that to say, now, subsequently, I don't log in with a document number. I sign in with a username and a password. If I'm a bank employee, presumably I've already got some sort of login that I use to get into Windows, and that would probably be better. But Christos and I are available on, we do something called the 425 Show, which is a sort of a streaming show and a Discord and a bunch of different things where we try to help customers who are doing identity related stuff and help developers be successful. So feel free to join us there. It's aka.ms/425 Show. There's also a Discord that's associated with that that you can join. And we're there along with a bunch of other people from our community internally and externally who are always happy to help. So it's a really good group of folks out there who are always happy to take their time and help other people out.
Exactly. You can find us on the 425show.dev. That's the easiest URL you can ever get. So yeah, you can reach out to us anytime to ask about identity. You can follow us on Twitter or Twitch to ask questions. We're always happy to help you out. And we really appreciate everyone for joining us today. We will see you all next Monday for the last installment of these series. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, everybody.